accept these few roses as a token of my unbounded esteem for you. You are so lovely in character and appearance that in your company one's spirits are lifted. You breathe warm-heartedness. You look on the world with such kindness that one wants to do only good and pleasant things for you in return. You will not believe how glad I am that I have met you. Happy you! All the more painfully I feel my own desolation and bitter fate. Always think well of me, just as you will always stay in my memory. Heartily devoted to you, Leos Janáček. In the midst of the hearts and flowers, the roses and the kindnesses, we might miss the line in this letter. All the more painfully I feel my own desolation and bitter fate. This is one of perhaps 700 letters exchanged by composer Leos Janáček with a woman named Kamila, letters that became the inspiration for this string quartet titled Intimate Letters. Intimate Letters by Janáček is one of the pieces on the program on March 31st at East Stroudsburg University as part of the continuing Larcher concert series. And the featured ensemble is the Ulysses String Quartet, winners of the grand prize and the gold medal in the senior string division of the 2016 Fischhoff National Chamber Music Competition. The group was founded in the summer of 2015. Ulysses also won first place in the American Prize and second prize of the Osaka International Chamber Music Competition in 2017. We had a chance to speak by phone with all of the members of the Ulysses String Quartet. They used Tina's cell phone and passed it from hand to hand, and we had a conversation on Friday about their music making and about the ensemble.
We're all from quite different places. So Grace, our cellist, is from Taipei, Taiwan. I myself grew up in Prince Edward Island, in Canada, just a small place, but lots of character. And Colin, our violist, is from Pittsburgh. And our other violinist, Rhiannon, she grew up in LA. So it's quite a broad mixture. And we actually met Colin, Rhiannon, and I at a music festival called Kneisel Hall. It happens every summer in Blue Hill, Maine, and it runs for 7.5 weeks. So you get to know each other quite intimately in that setting. And so we knew that, you know, this was a life that we kind of wanted to pursue together. And Kneisel is a great program. It changed my life, really. I think all of our lives. So I did my master's degree with Grace at Manhattan School of Music. So I kind of brought her on board there. So that's how we all came together when we all ended up moving to New York. It took a while.
There had to be more than just getting along with each other on the level of personality, though. You must have sensed you shared a common understanding of music in your lives. How do you all talk about that, that sensibility of music that you might share?
Well, I have to say that the four of us, we all think about music quite similarly, so I think that was one plus, getting together, that we all have really similar styles and we want to bring across the same approach. So that was really lucky, and I think that's why we're still together, you know, and serious 2.5 years in together. And in rehearsal, you know, there's little things to talk about, but mostly we see eye to eye, so it's been really great working with them that way.
Ah, yes, we're on the same page basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're all pretty fiery personalities, and we bring that to our playing. So, yeah, it's a good approach, I think.
I did notice that you not only play at wonderful concert halls like the Cohen Recital Hall, where you'll be on the 31st, but you also are out maybe at the supermarket in your greater neighborhood as people come to drop off the compost and pick up a quart of milk. So you like to take music where people are too, right?
Yes. I'm going to give this question to Rhiannon.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of our big sort of missions and passions as a group is sort of bringing music to more people, getting more people involved in classical music, especially young people, but also anyone who might not have had a lot of access to sort of formal concert settings. So we've done a lot of things in that area, like you said, outdoor at the farmers market or in shops, and also a lot of performances in people's homes. And a lot of those bring in a lot of young people. It's a really cool sort of intimate space. And we like it partly because it goes back to the beginnings of chamber music. You know, now you see it a lot in concert halls, but it was originally just a way for people to come together in their living rooms and sort of connect over great music and maybe food and drink. So we really like getting back to that and also doing, you know, community and educational programs, some of which I think we're doing in the future with Marche Concert Group as well.
When you play the range, and you talked about going back to the salon settings in those days when Haydn and Schubert and Beethoven and Mozart and that great literature, but also people who are your colleagues who are living and breathing and working and using computers to get the notes on down, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something that speaks to everyone, so we do try to keep a lot of variety in our programming, no matter where we're playing, so that people can hear the great classics, but also can maybe discover something new that maybe has something to say to a new generation or is relevant to the world today and how we relate to each other.
Do you each go off and look for pieces to do, or you know composers who are at school with you or what have you, and you bring it back to the group?
I'm going to give this one to Colin.
Yeah, so I think when we all get together to think about pieces to play, we just find things that really speak to us right away. And otherwise, we would have, I think, a difficulty justifying the interest in presenting it to audiences, because for us, one of the first things we need to do is figure out what the piece means to us emotionally and also philosophically, how we want to approach the piece. So let's take one of the pieces that we're playing on the program next week, the Janáček. That was, I think, one of the first pieces that Tina and I played together at Kneisel, actually, in a different formation. And it's just been a piece since the beginning for us that we all just really, really love. And it's so intense and so all over the place emotionally and motivically that it's just been a challenge. Well, actually, it's been a challenge that we love to present it.
And tell us a little bit about the situation. Janáček was late in his life, but he was head over heels.
Yeah, so he actually met a woman named Camila on vacation. I don't know exactly where, but he met her, and he was 35 years her senior. They were both married at the time, and he became infatuated with her. And over the course of the last few years of his life, they wrote over 700 letters. And it's interesting because the relationship, we're not clear whether it was whether the love was reciprocated by Camila. And she instructed him to destroy her side of the correspondences, so the only remaining letters are from Janáček himself.
If we listen to the piece, the word that people who write about the quartet use, and those of us who listen to it, and probably those of you who play it, keep talking about yearning, a sense of yearning. How do you all talk about, well, this sounds yearning, you've got notes on a page. Do you talk about the emotions in that way?
We do, absolutely. And I think one of the challenges that we look at when we're rehearsing and how it translates into performing is how to harness those emotions and also how to pace ourselves to make it through the piece without going too overboard or losing control. And that's something I think that when we perform, we've had to deal with, especially with that piece, just how to control it and how to feel it out. It feels totally different in performance, I think we can all agree, than in rehearsing. Some of the biggest moments or the sharpest contrast between sections.
You all know the poetic image about you can't tell the dancer from the dance, or that moment when the technique, an artist brings the technique, all of the technique he or she has to bear, but then they're surrendering to the creative energy and that sort of thing. And when I read about your performances, well, who are in the audience and writing as critics, they talk about you all as kind of an organic unit, that you all breathe kind of as an organism that is greater than the sum of the parts. Is that something that you experience from the inside when you're playing?
I'm going to pass this question over to Grace.
So yeah, when you brought that up, it reminds me, a lot of people from the audience always approach us after concerts and saying how much they love our eye contact and body language on stage. And so I think, like, besides playing, listening, and showing it is also part of the performance. And it shows the intensity and our feelings, sometimes through that kind of body language as well. And to also grasp what other players are about to do, because sometimes we do things spontaneous, like at the moment, depends on what we're feeling. So it's not, and not everything is note to note planned out. I think that's what makes a great live performance.
And that's why we want to come and hear you. And
yeah.
How did you choose what to surround the Janacek with? The Beethoven and the Mozart and the Wolf?
We are not actually playing the Wolf on the program. Actually, I believe we are playing the Turina, La Oración del Torero, the Prayer of the Bullfighter. But it's actually a really fun, Spanish-y, flared piece. It's really, I don't know, it's quite lovely. But yeah, I think we chose these pieces because the Mozart is very deep, yet there's a lightness about it, so people are going to feel good after we play that. So we wanted to open the concert with, you know, a classic and something that people can connect to right away. And then the Beethoven is much more complex, and as the title states, it's serious. Opus 95 Serioso. So we thought it would match the Mozart quite well because of how dark it is and how compact it is. So it's definitely short enough to be on the same program as, or the same half of the program as something lighter like the Mozart. So we believe that that will work very well. And we also thought that the Beethoven is a great foreshadowing to the Janacek after the break. So that's kind of why we put those two together. They both have similarities, believe it or not, even though they're from completely different times and genres. And we just thought the Turina would be a nice break for the audience, really. We're like, okay, it's too much serious stuff, so let's put something lighter in there.
And are you going to come back a bit later and do a kind of master class or work with some young students in the Poconos?
Yes, and Rhiannon is our educational expert, so she will tell you all about it.
Well, we don't have all the details yet, but what we normally do for educational concerts, we do some workshops. We try to do as much playing as possible so the students really get, you know, a kind of an immersive musical experience so they can hear a lot of different things and get an idea for what a string quartet is all about. And then we do some talking. We usually do some activities to sort of show the particular challenges of playing in a quartet and all the ensemble stuff that we've been talking about body language and how do you sort of work out different people's emotions and personalities and make that all come together. And then also give them some information about the music from different time periods and what makes Beethoven special, like, why was he famous aside from the fact that he was deaf, which he's one of Tina's favorite composers, so she usually takes that one on. And then how did music change over the hundreds of years that people have been writing string quartets? Because that's one of the cool things for us. Playing in a quartet is the repertoire is so rich going back hundreds of years that there really is something for everyone. And that's one of the cool things about this concert, too, is that we go from Mozart, which is sort of the classic, you know, what everybody thinks about when they think about classical music, to the Janacek, which is really wild, and the Turina, which is like a 20th century piece, but a much more sort of romantic take on it. So we try to bring just sort of like a tasting platter of that to students usually, so they can see what's on offer and they can decide what they want to delve into more in their life and in their education.
Who usually handles the "we named our quartet Ulysses because" question?
Colin.
That would be me. So I used to be a huge history buff. I'll go back 1 second and start with the fact that I think naming anything, especially a quartet, is probably the hardest thing, one of the hardest things when we were starting out to do. So we wanted to find a name that we all really could connect to and agree on. So that, you know, took hundreds of attempts, I think. I'm not exaggerating, I promise. So one day I was just driving very early in the morning, actually, to Lehigh, nearby Strasbourg. And I had been reading a book called Gods and Generals, which is the prequel to Killer Angels. And it was about the Civil War leading up to Gettysburg, the Battle of Gettysburg. And Ulysses S. Grant was about to take over the army. So I thought, Ulysses, huh, that has a really nice ring to it. And we all happened to live within the close vicinity of Grant's tomb in the Upper West Side. So that was an interesting connection for us as a group. And it also is the Latin version of Odysseus from the Odyssey. And we took our journey as a group from the onset, discovering our identity and character through our travels across the world and also through the quartet repertoire and all the new music that we've been discovering composed even last year or in the past decade.
Colin Brooks, Christina Bowie, Raylan Bannert, and Grace Ho, members of the award-winning string quartet known as the Ulysses Quartet. We just heard why and how they chose that name. They will perform at Cohen Recital Hall this Saturday evening at 7:30, and on the program, Mozart's String Quartet in B-flat major, Kircher Listing 589, Beethoven's Serioso Quartet, Opus 95, and the Janacek Intimate Letters Quartet. For more information about the continuing Larcher concert series online, you may check ulyssesquartet.com or larcherconcertgroup.com. The Ulysses String Quartet with Mozart, Beethoven, Janacek, and Turina, and that's Saturday, March 31st at 7:30 p.m. at Cohen Recital Hall on the campus of East Strasbourg University. And for more information on the web, ulyssesquartet.com or esu.edu. Now, we heard that the Pocono Youth Orchestra will host an interactive string clinic with the Ulysses String Quartet, and that date is April 14th at 3 in the afternoon. It's made possible by the Larcher Concert Group, and they are celebrating the Pocono Youth Orchestra's 30th anniversary. There is no charge, and it's a wonderful chance for young string players particularly to come together and hear, as we just heard Rhiannon mention, the various ways of talking about what a string quartet is and what the considerations are. And that's all April 14th at 3 in the afternoon. And that's an interactive concert demonstration for regional string players at the Stroudsburg Middle School, 200 Mountaineer Drive in Stroudsburg. And for more information, ulysseskwartet.com or pocono-youth-orchestra.org.